In dog years, she's dead, but she's very much alive on Encore this evening. Why theatre should make us laugh. And a Westmeath children's writer goes from strength to strength. You're very welcome to Encore this evening with the best of what is happening in the arts in Laois, Offaly and Westmeath. We're here every Thursday night between 7 and 8 o'clock. Tonight, Kate Heffernan, playwright, joins us to talk about moving back to Laois and being the county's 2022 Platform 31 Award recipient. Kate is the author of award-winning play In Dog Years, I'm Dead. We talk to Jimmy Keary, a playwright whose work has them rolling in the aisles across the Midlines, and he'll tell us why those laughs are so important and why engaging with people who attend theatre is also really, really vital for him. And Dolores Keaveney writes again. Her beautifully illustrated children's books continue to wow audiences from the page, and she herself was delighted to get back to school visits once the COVID restrictions were removed. She'll be chatting to us a little bit later on. All to come indeed on the show later. Don't forget that you can contact me at any stage, encore@midlands103.com. Delighted to hear from you always. For now, however, we are a tiny little warm-up act for Forest Fest, which is starting tomorrow and running for 3 days of music, art, entertainment and more, all in Emo in County Laois. Eileen Gogan takes to the stage there. You'll have heard her on Midlands 103's mixtape Nua on Friday nights. She's an emerging voice and she's a great one. The Riptide Movement need no introduction, however. Just a flavour of the acts that you'll hear at Forest Fest this weekend. After the break, we're off to Platform 31 to the Laois recipient, Kate Heffernan. Stay with us on Encore on Midlands 103. And you're very welcome back to Encore. Still to come on the programme, we'll be talking to Jimmy Keary, the playwright, and to the Westmeath children's writer, Dolores Keaveney. So lots to look forward to on the show still this evening. Platform 31 is a project run by the arts offices all around the country to support in each county every year one artist in their mid-career and giving them an opportunity and some money to reevaluate where they're at in their career and see what their new options are. The Laois recipient this year is Kate Heffernan, and Kate joins me on the line. Kate, you're welcome to Encore. It is 8 years since we have been engaged in an arts conversation for the radio when you were doing.
It.
I know when you were doing Home Truths. Yes. Tell us what's been going on in your life at the moment, in terms of your art and your.
Absolutely. So lots of meaty projects on my plate at the moment, which is quite exciting. Now, partly that's because a few of them were backlogged because of the pandemic. So one book play in particular kind of was abandoned mid-development just at the beginning of 2020. And we were about to go all guns blazes with it again. So that's called Guest Host Stranger Ghost. And that is a play about three 30-somethings who are living in an older woman's house. So essentially it's based in the environment of the Fair Deal scheme. So this woman has gone to a nursing home in a sudden health crisis, left her house quite abandoned, but her family are in a situation where they have to rent out the house to cover those extra costs of the nursing home. So this is reality of several of my friends in Dublin who are living in these houses that are kind of time capsules and held in this kind of suspended animation. So they're living their lives amongst this, usually a woman, this woman's life, surrounded by all her stuff. And the reality is, as soon as she dies, they'll have to move out to make way for her wake. So it's really quite a strange living situation. And I thought, well, that is a strange living situation. How do I make that a strange theatre situation?
Yeah.
So that play is designed around those lives. So thinking about people who are very transient and kind of living in borrowed spaces. So what if we did that as a borrowed stage space? So the play happens on the stages of other people's plays. So if you could imagine the show happening at 8 o'clock in the evening, we do our show at 6 o'clock. We have to be kicked off stage in time for that
Oh, wow.
show to do their technical kind of run through. So the show ends in the technician coming on stage to interrupt us. And that's been quite fun to play with because it really has to work on very different types of stages. So you can imagine a stage like a big Chekhov play with a farce with a big living room set. With loads of doors and lots of detail, and then for it to work on a much more contemporary space like that, maybe with just a dance floor and microphones.
Wow.
Choreography of that is really very important in the development. And the idea is that we can travel quite light. We could, if we put it on the festival context, we might be able to perform on a different stage every night.
And in terms of theatre, one of the things that has happened really in the last maybe 10 or 12 years is the necessity for plays to be able to travel light. Because the expense of putting on a huge production is extraordinary, and it's really very clever of you to piggyback on other people's stage and set.
Yeah, and there's something really satisfying in the how the theme of the play really resonates with the stringent circumstances of these people. Really is the reality of touring theatre as well. And how can we think a bit more laterally? Because, there's a lot of plays who are, for financial reasons, don't have sets. You know, they travel in a kind of a suitcase.
Yeah, it's a plane in a bag.
Absolutely.
So how do those conversations go? How do those conversations go when you ring a director and say, hey, I know you've got a show in Dunamace or in Burr Arts or in Burr or in the Dean Crow at 8 o'clock on Friday night. Do you mind if we squat from 6 o'clock till 7:30?
It is a tricky conversation and made trickier by COVID because of the health and safety regulations, and the sharing of things and spaces is much more stringent. So we have our work cut out for us, really, in thinking about it. But in our development, we shared, there was a production of Neil Simon play happening in Mermaid Arts Centre in Bray, and they were incredibly accommodating. I'm afraid the name of the company slips my mind. It was 2019.
It was a different lifetime.
But they, it's really, really interesting because the conversation is so similar to the conversation that these characters might have been having with the landlord, which is, you can touch this and you can use this room, but please don't touch this. Please don't move that. And so the characters and the show have to really negotiate themselves around all these things every time.
Okay. So speaking of negotiating things, you are back in Laois. You are the 2022 recipient of the Platform 31 Award. What are you going to do with that? What are you going to investigate in terms of yourself, I suppose, and your work?
Yeah, so the Platform 31 initiative is so all the local arts offices in conjunction with the Arts Council. It's a professional development programme, and it's to allow an artist per council area, so 31 council areas, and that's why it's called Platform 31. They're giving that artist time and space to maybe think a little bit about their work and how they might, if they want to work a little bit differently, and maybe make a bit of a pivot. And I suppose my thinking in applying was that the vulnerability of theatre artists in the pandemic, and we all had a vulnerability in the pandemic, but basically all my work stopped. Everything went on hold, and I felt quite powerless in how I might adapt some of those stories to happen off stage. So thinking, my practice is very much about being a playwright and writing plays for the stage, but I want to use this time to think about myself maybe a bit more as a storyteller and how I tell stories in different contexts. So that's really my focus.
And doing that at home, back on the old sod, is that going to make a difference for you, having been in Dublin for quite a while? Is it a different, I mean, it has to be a different ground to grow on.
It is totally different. And I'm very interested in making work that's very much of, I suppose, I thought about it a lot. And I mean, I've always been drawn to telling stories about the place I'm from, but I sometimes worry or thought a bit that actually that work was at a certain remove because I wasn't immersed in the place. So I'd like to explore that a bit, how I really connect with people in the development of the work, and how I tell local stories.
And how are you filling the well now that you're home, the creative well?
How am I filling the well? I am spending a lot of time outdoors in a way that is completely new. I became, like a lot of people, quite obsessed with gardening in the pandemic. And I'm very active vegetable grower, very active composter. I am meeting a community of people through that. And that's been really great to reconnect.
And is that going to be fertile ground? Sorry to push the metaphor there. Is it going to be fertile ground for ideas and for in the, is that kind of a space? You know, where Robert Frost, the poet, gave up teaching jobs so that he could come home and plant apple trees and be a farmer, so that he could he had space in his head to think while his body was physically engaged in other things. Do you find that works for you creatively?
I do find that works for me. I do find the Yeah, there's total calm and total empty head, just thinking time when you're out working, because it's quite repetitive, you know, the kind of gardening work. And that is really useful for thinking time. I think also I've been thinking a lot about the difference in my approach to gardening, how kind I am to myself as a gardener versus how hard I am myself as an artist. You know, that crops fail. And I go, OK, that didn't work. I need to adjust slightly. I'm much harder on myself when things fail as an artist. I also am very kind to the soil as a gardener. You know, I take time to make good compost and to do green manures, everything that replenishes the soil. Do I do the same for my artistic practice? Do I take time to replenish those thoughts and creative juices? So I'm really, I am finding really, really interesting connections and differences. Those two things might vary.
Okay. Finally, I want to ask you, are we going to see guest host Stranger Ghost here in the Midlands anytime soon?
Oh, I would hope so. I think as more shows are back on stage, for guest host Stranger Ghost to work, we need theatre back to 2019 levels. And I think hopefully we'll get there soon. And I would love to be putting it on the stage, sharing the stage. Dunamaze and elsewhere, absolutely.
Kate Heffernan, thank you so much for talking to us this evening on Encore. And you can find out more about Kate and her work at her website, kateheffernan.ie. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Jimmy Keary, and after that it will be Dolores Keaveney. What a great show we have for you tonight. Stay with us on Encore on Midlands 103. Still to come on Encore, I'll be chatting to Dolores Keaveney, the children's writer extraordinaire. But for now, we are going to Rathowen, because all over the world, people can travel through the universal stories and characters of Jimmy Keary. And the Rathowen man is behind Gabriel Foley and his two loves, and For Better or For Worse, a play performed just weeks ago by Mount Melick Drama Group. Producer A.C. Reynolds was so impressed that Jimmy offered to come down and visit the cast and crew in Mount Melick. He also came to see them on the final night of the show. You were in Mount Melick for the first read through of For Better or For Worse, and you were also there on the final night to see the performance.
I was, and I went to one of the dress rehearsals in between as well. So,
why does that matter to you?
Well, writing itself is a very lonely occupation, and I like just meeting with people, connecting with people, especially connected with my work. So I like meeting cast. I like talking to cast. I like talking about how I wrote a play. I just like kind of giving them an insight into the characters or how I see the characters. And obviously audiences are important too. So I just like talking to people. I mean, I'm always available for a chat. Because as I say, I spend a lot of time in front of a laptop writing, and, you know, it is, I'm isolated. So any chance I get to meet people, I take it. And then with the last few years, the way they were, I didn't have an opportunity to do that. So that was really one of the first, when I went to the read-through, I love sitting with a cast when they're reading my play for the first time, because you kind of, they're reacting to what they're reading, with laughter, and it may not make for a great reading, but I enjoy it. I enjoy their spontaneous reaction. It's kind of, like adrenaline or like a junkie or whatever. It's just, it gives me a kick.
And then when you go along to a dress rehearsal and then a few nights later to a final performance, do you see any difference?
Oh, you would. I mean, you'd see a progression. I mean, you'd see a progression. Obviously, people are more comfortable with their roles. They're more comfortable with their lines. I mean, there is a progression. Obviously, it's a process that every cast has to go through, like from the first read through to the performances. You know, it's a completely different thing at the end than at the beginning, because they're only starting out on the process, like at the first read through. And normally now, I mean, Montmelick was a rarity. I wouldn't normally have that much association with a group. It's just that they were near. And again, I just had been missing that contact with the group. So unfortunately, from their perspective, I was around a lot.
I don't think they were unfortunate at all. But can I ask you, having been there then for those three really important parts in the journey of a play coming to full production, did you learn anything about the play?
Well, every time I see it performed, you know, I'd make the odd change here and there, or maybe think a line didn't work, or maybe there were too many lines in that particular scene or whatever. I'm a perfectionist, so, and maybe slightly insecure, maybe. And so when I'm in an audience, I kind of always pick out the person who isn't laughing, or that's just my own hang up. And you're kind of hoping for a reaction, you know, because the one person that isn't enjoying it, maybe, you know, you kind of focus in on them more than, you know, which I shouldn't, of course. But it's just the way of a playwright, or at least it's my way anyway. When I sit in an audience, it's just great to hear positive feedback and the laughter and that. It's like adrenaline, really.
AC was telling us about somebody you sat beside at a performance who did not enjoy the show, and it made such an impression on you that you included her as a character. Tell us a bit more about that from your perspective.
Yeah, I was at a play down the country, and I turned to a lady at half time, and I can't remember if she knew whether I was the playwright or not. But I said to her, was she enjoying the play? And, oh God, no, she didn't like it at all. She was only there to support somebody who was in the cast. And I later found out her first name was Miriam. And so when I was writing my next play, I included the name Miriam in the cast just for my own.
And do you think, Jimmy, did she not enjoy it, or was she determined
No, she wasn't enjoying it. It wasn't her sort of play.
Okay.
It just wasn't. She just was. She was there reluctantly, and she was determined not to enjoy it.
Okay.
And she was just sort of, you know, kind of not, you know, it was kind of beneath her, or she wasn't, you know, she just didn't find it. You know, she just wasn't happy with it. She wasn't happy being there.
Yeah. It's funny, one of those things that we've seen in the last number of years is a lot of snobbery that has developed around laughter. You know, the laughing, there seems to be something beneath us in laughing at something if we consider ourselves to be cultured.
Comedy tends to have that more so than serious drama. I mean, like, I suppose certain groups won't look at my plays because they're comedies. So my plays would rarely be in festivals, or, you know, because they tend to go for more serious plays in festivals. And, I mean, you can't do anything about people's attitudes. It's probably been there all the time, but it's just maybe you've noticed it more maybe in the last number of years.
Mm. How has your relationship with Gabriel Foley developed over all of the years now that he has been a part of your life, that you've taken him through?
He has been a part of my life for 12 years.
Wow.
God bless us. That was the first time I'd ever explored mother and son relationship. Originally, it was The Two Loves of Gabriel Foley. That was the first play in which he appeared. And at the time, I was looking after my own late mother. And so I was able to draw on some of that, although my mother, God rest her, wasn't anything like Aggie Foley in the play. But obviously for comic effect, you would exaggerate things. But it's a very common theme, or it's a common occurrence, especially in the country, where a bachelor farmer or a woman on a, you know, will be looking after an elderly parent or both parents because other members of the family have gone off to work, or maybe it's just like in my case, I was, you know, I'm an only child. So it's just a very common situation. And I don't know, is that why the play took off so quickly? And it's been, The Two Loves of Gabriel Foley has been my most popular play to date in the number of performances. And like, it hasn't just been performed here in Ireland, it's been performed in Canada.
In Connecticut
in
at the moment.
I'm going to be in Connecticut now starting Thursday night, please.
Fantastic.
God.
Fantastic. And we are going to leave that chat with Jimmy Keary here for just now. Jimmy, the author of The Two Loves of Gabriel Foley, for better or for worse. And we'll take it up again next week on the programme. He'll be chatting to us about the value of a good laugh and how important it is to be out and about and engaging with people, and how that feeds into his character. So very much to look forward to next week on the programme, the continuation of that chat with Jimmy Keary. After the break here on Encore, Dolores Keaveney. You're very welcome back to Encore this evening. My final guest on the programme tonight is Dolores Keaveney, and it has been such a pleasure to have been with Dolores on the journey of Jenny the Little Red Hen and all the different characters that she has brought to the pages of her children's books over the last number of years. She's such a wonderful artist and such a lovely storyteller and beloved of children in schools all over the country, and Dee the Bee being particularly popular. I was chatting to Dolores recently, and the first thing I asked her was whether 2020 was the best year she has had possibly so far in her career.
Probably, yes. But I've had great years all along from the word starting off, even from 2009. I've been busy now in 2022. I will be busy in 2023, hopefully. But in 2022, it has been busy, yeah. And especially after the whole lockdown thing, because I hadn't been out and about, but I've started to spread my wings again. So I'm really looking forward to the rest of the year and next year.
Will you introduce us to Huey?
Huey, okay. Well, last year Huey started about a year, 2 years ago. I started writing a little book called Huey the Apple Tree. And it was because of my grandson, Hugh, who I mind every Monday here. He was eating an apple and a seed fell out. And you know me, I love nature and stuff like that. And I said to him, come on, and we'll sow it in a pot. So we got the pot and put the moss peat into it, and we sowed the seed. So I put it outside in the window, and that was the end of it. We didn't think about it after that. So one day I was out. It was windy and the weather was bad, and I was outside and I saw this little pot on the ground, and I said, well, that's that. There'll be no apple tree here. So, and I just looked down, and didn't I see a seed with two little leaves on the ground? And there it was. So we potted it again and grew to be an apple tree. It's about 10 foot tall now.
Wow.
And then I was inspired to write a little book called Huey the Apple Tree. And it was about us planting, him planting the seed and the wind blowing it down, and he put it in a different pot and it grew and grew, and he was so delighted. And in the end, it grew and it produced apples, and he wanted to call it something, and he decided that he'd call it Huey, the nicest name of all, after himself. So that was the start of Huey. So we proceeded then this year. I said, look, we have foxes, a fox. When we look out the window, sometimes we see a fox, a red fox, trotting along in the distance. And one day I was sitting in the kitchen and I ran up the side of the house. So that's how I got inspired to write Huey Meets the Red Fox, which I launched in Belvedere about 3 weeks ago. But I wanted to include my youngest grandson called Austin J. So That's how Huey Meets the Red Fox came about. And this was about, it's really about, it's nearly fact in the sense that when I look out the window, I see the big field. So I had the boys went out into that big field and they were running and playing. And then they met a mole and he said, don't go down further because there's monsters down there. And they didn't care, they didn't mind. So they trotted off and they were jumping across rivers. And eventually they got tired and fell asleep. And suddenly a big red fox was, when they woke up, he was there and he shouted at them and they jumped up and ran away and he called them back to play and had a great time playing with the foxes and they had met newfound friends and when they went home they slept soundly dreaming of the big field and the foxes. And the last page is, sometimes being a friend means coming out to play. So that was the inspiration for that book. And to be honest with you, at the moment I'm there's an Instagram book tour. I met a lovely girl. I'll tell you about her in a second. But just to tie in with the book, she put up every day that for the next week. There's someone is going to review the book, and a girl did review it, and it's really lovely, you know. And the review she put up was fantastic. And it's all about that. It's about, you know, how you discover, if you go out and play, if the children go out and play in the, you know, the summer and they can meet different friends and you lose all your fear and you you enjoy the countryside, basically, and nature, you know.
Yeah.
And that's really what it's about, you know.
It's a lovely, sustainable circle that you have in the work that you do, which is connecting family and nature and story and the illustration together. It's a very...
Well, they're mostly about nature, I suppose. And in Huey, I've used stick men. I didn't put... You see, at the time when I started doing that, I couldn't paint a lot. I had a bit of a trapped nerve in my neck, which I have ongoing repetitive thing. So I used stick men in it. So the children can call them who they like. They don't have to, you know, they can put their own names in there, you know. And I've just used, I've only two books of that. I'm not sure will I be able to continue. I suppose I could. It could have the adventures of Huey and Austin going somewhere. I don't know. I haven't any more Huey in my mind at the moment.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah.
So that's how I, that's concept of the stick men and Huey. It was really from my grandkids, I suppose, the two lads.
Yeah.
You know, they inspired me. They inspire me every day because they're amazing, the children.
Yeah. How many books is that now, Dolores?
Well, if you count up all the books and the one with John with the Hill Speak and the I got one translated into Irish, it's number 17.
Wow.
Do you remember when you came to Mullingar and I was shivering in my shoes and you had to interview me for
something? I do, and we sat upstairs in the Greville Arms Hotel.
Well, it wasn't the Greville.
Was it not?
No, it was in Mount Street. It was a coffee shop that was there in Mount Street. I'm nearly certain it was. Maybe it was the Greville.
Oh, yes, maybe it was. I had a notion it was some evening in the Greville in the, and it was dark.
That's
upstairs and we sat up.
It
is a long time ago. It is.
Yeah.
It must be 10 years or more now.
At least. Well, I'm 12. 2009 I started.
Oh, wow.
Doing the books. And I suppose it was around my second one. You see, Nationwide came down I was on Nationwide, you know that.
Of course, yes. The whole country knows that Dolores Keaveney was on Nationwide.
Anyway, it was a great experience. It really was. I was delighted with that, you know. And that was because, well, I did ask them to come down. I'll tell you why. One of the books that I got, it's a publisher in Australia. It's called Bee the Bee, and it's all about the fruit and veg that the bee pollinates. And you know my thing about bees. I'm mad into bees. But the publisher, you see, it's difficult with a publisher in Australia because they're not really near you. And he allowed me, you know, sell websites, which is different. So a girl in Mount Melick Library had this idea because she saw it somewhere that they would erect a story trail. Did I talk to you about that? I'm not sure.
No, you didn't.
Mount Melick, children's playground. So she put it up 2 years ago. It was the first year of the pandemic, and it was brilliant. I gave her all the spreads, and she blew them up and put them outside, and the kids could walk around while they're playing it. Just read about a different page at a time. One page would do. You know, you could about the fruit and the veg that the bee pollinates for us. So then I approached several libraries, and they have really taken it on board, and I think it's up in six places now, outdoor.
Wow.
Where the children can, and I'm going, it's up in Newbridge in their linear park at the moment. It's in Ballinasloe. And if I were a bee, the first book is up in Galway. I haven't gone to it yet, but I have to do some readings there, outdoor readings during the summer, which is great. It's different. You know.
You love the readings and you love the visits to the schools, don't you?
I did.
You must be delighted to be back in schools.
Well, I haven't gone to any school yet.
Have you not?
No, I didn't. I'm going soon now, the libraries have been, it is my business, literally, because last year and the year before, I didn't go anywhere. I didn't get out. I didn't go to any of those places. I stopped with them, you know. And I made videos instead, which was fantastic. And the libraries took them on board and they put them out on their websites or whatever during the different events like Crinoline and, you know, World Book Day and stuff like that. So that was amazing, you know. Well, I've been busy because of trying to launch the book and stuff like that, and then getting the nationwide thing and, you know, different things. I decided I wasn't going to the libraries. They weren't on anyway with the pandemic. You know, they had stopped bringing in people into the libraries, you know, and then they used videos instead. But they're all full speed ahead now for the rest of the summer, and I have some bookings for the Children's Book Festival in October. So I'm looking forward to that. Well, I just want to thank everybody, people in general, for the support. You know, I keep trashing out the books, and I just keep on doing it. I don't hold on to them in my head much when I have them done. I want to get on to the next one. And I just want to thank everybody who supported me for the last 12 years, because without them, I wouldn't be able to do it. You know, everybody in every area, the libraries, the people who buy the books, everyone, my family, who think I'm cracked, I suppose, half the time. But anyway, it's been a great journey for me, especially at, you know, when you get onto your, I started when I was 60. And it has been just amazing. I've been in a little world of my own. And, you know, I love gardening and nature, and I've been able to just put that into the book so that maybe children would, you know, appreciate that. I hope they get the message that nature is the best. It's it. Nature is everything.
And that is the inimitable Dolores Keaveney. And you'll get Dolores's books in all good bookshops and indeed on her website, which is worth a follow. That's it from Encore for this evening. Thank you so much for the pleasure of your company. It's been wonderful to have you. Thanks indeed also to all of my guests this evening. Encore will be back next week when we'll be talking to Ian Malini, who is the Offaly recipient of the Platform 31 Award. And we'll also be finishing that interview with Jimmy Curie. And as well as that, Paul McCarrick, poet, drops in for a chat and a few words. So all to come next week on the programme. Do stay tuned to Midlands 103. Country Roads is up after the news at 8 o'clock. I'll be back in this seat again next week. Until then, take care of yourself. Good night.